Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. This is Jen, and for new and returning listeners, you may know you can find the podcast on Tumblr, on iTunes, or what was formerly iTunes and is now Apple Podcast, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Play, as well as on Twitter at Minorities in Pub. I'm so happy to welcome our latest guest, Kelly Yang, who is the best-selling author of the middle grade book Front Desk, which she also won an Asian Pacific American Award for Children's Literature. And she has a new book out as of earlier this summer called Parachute. So you went into the YA world with some heavy stuff too. Welcome, Kelly. Thank you so much for joining me from California.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
As people may imagine, we are still in quarantine. Who knew?
Absolutely still in quarantine. Absolutely. Yep.
We're still here.
We have survived. How many months has it been? It's like now like 3 months? Three, four months.
Y'all's in California were the smart ones because you went and y'all shut down first.
Early on, like in early March, I remember. And then, yeah, who would have thought that it'd go on for so long? I mean, I'm glad though that we're taking all the safety precautions.
Yeah, I've done probably the majority of episodes for this year during quarantine. Yeah, I did one interview in January, and then every interview thus far has been during quarantine. And I remember the earlier ones were like, well, we might not be in quarantine by the time your book comes out. Turns out we were.
Definitely. I've had those conversations. We don't know what's going to happen when your book comes out, but it might be the whole world is back to normal. It might be the whole world has collapsed.
We're still here, though, so that's a plus.
Yes, we're still here.
So you're not new to this. Front Desk was your debut?
Yes.
And she hit the bestseller list right out the gate, y'all.
it took a little more than a year. So it wasn't one of those, it debuted on the bestsellers list. It really took a long time for the word of mouth to get out. This was a book that was acquired for very little money from Scholastic and had not a ton of marketing, not a ton of publicity, all that stuff. And so it really was, it just surprised us. I think that all the librarians and all the educators and parents and kids who somehow got a hold of it just really responded to it. So I was very, very, very surprised.
I think this gets so lost in the conversation. And I also feel as though the middle grade discussions are very different from the YA discussions. And I'm not going to get into that drama of Twitter, because I'm off it right now for my own sanity. But I do feel like when it comes to hitting the list, that there's kind of an unhealthy expectation paid, and I'm not projecting that onto you. I'm talking about kind of this forward-facing discussion of the anticipation of those first few weeks when your book publishes. And did I hit the list? Am I going to hit the list? Oh my God, does it mean I failed because I didn't hit the list?
Right.
And building that audience, like you said, especially with librarians who are so key for children's lit. That's
huge. Oh my God, librarians are awesome. I love librarians. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, there's this incredible obsession when it comes to the list. I have friends who are, you know, it's upsetting when they don't hit it. And it's upsetting when they have expectations, or maybe their editor has expectations. And it's really hard because we don't even know how that list gets compiled. A lot of that stuff is a mystery. And I think that for me, I was a debut author. I knew that the chances of hitting the list were going to be tiny. I was also living in Hong Kong at the time, so I didn't even live in the US. I've since moved back, so I now live in the US. Just the number of friends and family that I could depend on to buy the book was very, very limited. So in that sense, I really did not expect that it would debut on the list at all. And the nice thing with Scholastic, at least, is that there really isn't any expectation. There isn't this pressure, which was really, really great. And then the other nice thing about having a book come out in a pandemic is there's also not a ton of pressure, for better or for worse, but there's not a ton of pressure in terms of sales, at least that I've experienced. And so that's been really nice.
Oh, that's interesting. Because now you're getting into heavier material, young adult, and Front Desk was pretty different. Like, it really was. I also, when you approach middle grade, it's not to say middle grade can't be heavy. It absolutely can be. You switch gears a lot in terms of what's going on in Parachutes. Kind of give a summary for those who are unfamiliar with Parachutes.
Parachutes is a YA novel about two girls. And one of the girls is Claire. She's a parachute from China. The term comes from kids who come to the U.S. to study in high school by themselves without their parents. And they sort of parachute in. And they generally live with a host family. And her host sister is Danny, who's a 17-year-old, very, very ambitious and amazing student going to this school on a scholarship. And the two girls are actually dealing with very similar issues of sexual misconduct in their school, but they don't know it. They are not talking to each other about this at this point in the novel. And the whole story is just about how they navigate it. One has a lot of money, the other doesn't. One has a complete support system with friends in the school, teachers, etc. One is just all alone in this foreign country. And we see sort of the parallels and the similarities with the two girls and how they find their voice and speak up and ultimately sort of help shatter the rape culture in the school.
And we use multiple perspectives because I'm a huge fan of that, not just in reading, but in my own writing. Mm-hmm. And I thought about the parallels, like you're saying, parallels and parachutes, of having them kind of be isolated from one another, even though they are in the same space. Like, they're not besties. This isn't like two girls joined together to, you know, solve the mysteries of, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're not immediately besties. It's almost like a love story between them, and it really takes the whole novel for them to find themselves, find each other, and find themselves. But yeah, the two perspectives were great. It was so hard to write. It was like a dual POV is, I'm pretty certain I'm not going to do that again. It just was so hard.
She's hard pass going forward, everybody.
No, I mean, because, you know, I didn't realize it, but it's like writing two different novels and then having to weave them together. And of course, every time you edit, it's like editing two different novels and making sure that they still line up. And when you're going through rounds and rounds and rounds of revision, that adds up to like eight novels or something crazy like that. So yeah, I would say that it was hard, but I think I improved my writing as a result. It was a challenge and I grew creatively.
Can you talk about choosing that? And maybe that's the wrong word because I recognize writers don't always choose what happens. You know, you come in, you're like, this is what the story is about. And then it might take a way left turn in terms of how it evolves on the page.
Right.
And at the same time, having someone who is very rich, someone who is foreign to America's expectations, and then having someone who is raised in America's expectations and is still very isolated due to her race and also due to her economic standpoints, but also isn't the only one who's dealing with the economic issues in terms of the hierarchies and the prejudices and all that. It is interesting. The aim was to keep them apart, to have this kind of fractious relationship with them. Right. And I'm just so curious about going with that, because I think that's something that everyone would kind of, not everyone, I shouldn't say, but yeah, I just thought it was such an interesting choice, authoritatively and authorial.
Yeah. So in terms of the choice, I always knew, and in fact, we had multiple offers from people who wanted me to cut out one of the girls, either take out Danny or take out Claire.
And wow, really?
Yeah, multiple offers on the table and many, many phone calls with editors saying, I think it'd be better if you focused on one girl or, you know, the other girl. And in my mind as a creator, I always knew that I wanted it to be both girls because I wanted to show the different nuances of something like sexual misconduct, sexual assault, sexual harassment, and how your circumstances do inform how you go through it a little bit. I was that scholarship student. You know, I didn't grow up a rich parachute. My parents came to America when I was six, and we grew up in the circumstances of Mia Tain and Front Desk, really clawing our way out of poverty. It was really, really tough. And when you're a scholarship student at a prestigious school and something happens to you, everything that you took for granted that you thought that you could access kind of freezes. And you kind of think about how much can I speak up, right? At what point, if I speak up, is my scholarship going to be threatened? Am I going to be labeled difficult or whatever? And so it's a really different story to tell from Danny's eyes than from Claire's. And I wanted to have both perspectives. It was absolutely critical to me. I'm so glad that my editor, Ben Rosenthal, allowed me to do that. So from a standpoint of, I really wanted to tell this story about a very modern Me Too story, very real, and getting a really hard, close, and fascinating look at just how this plays out in different people's lives. This issue that we all face, maybe at some point in our lives, we could all face it, and how it affects all of us differently. And then in terms of the two girls not always getting along, I really wanted to make them very real. They're flawed characters. They're not perfect. Neither of them are perfect. I mean, they get on each other's nerves. I mean, they're practically quarantined together. You know, they do get on each other's nerves, especially at first, I think. But it really takes them finding each other, finding their commonalities as women, as people going through something hard, that they finally come together.
And sometimes I feel as though that rah-rah, sis, boom, boss, immediate sisterhood reads as fake on the page a lot of the time, unless it's established relationships.
In reality, I mean, Dani is someone, and she's from an amazing, I mean, she's Filipino-American, she's a gung-ho debater, she's worked her whole life to get where she is, and worked her butt off, right? Her mom has struggled and cleans rooms, cleans houses after school, like my parents clean a motel after when I was growing up. That's very real, and for her to then look at Claire, who's really privileged, parachuting in from China with her mom's American Express card, and can, like, eat whatever she wants and go to whatever restaurant she wants and buy whatever fancy stuff that she wants. Of course, initially, you're going to judge her a little bit, right? If I were Dani, I would judge Claire a little bit too. It'd just be like, well, you know, you are the epitome of everything that I'm not. And now I have to live with you, you know? So that whole natural immediate sisterhood, it wasn't going to be authentic. So I needed them to find each other, flaws and everything, and go through this evolution where they can actually come together.
And also process, I guess, really what the avenues they can take when things go awry and, right, and they're violated.
Yeah.
Because I think as someone also who has experienced, there's so much you don't feel like you have the power to do at any age, but especially, right, as a young person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And especially if you're not with your parents, or if you don't think your parents will get it or understand, or if you're afraid of hurting your parents. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that decision-making process. It has to do with what teachers around you are saying, what the administration is saying, what your friends are saying. And I wanted to capture all of that and all its messiness in Parachutes.
Yeah, and it's messy.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens is messy. The book isn't messy. The people are messy.
it's really messy.
Especially now, but man, mess. And a lot of fear. You know, mm-hmm. It's amazing how much is rooted in fear, right?
Right.
And how that's such a catalyst, especially for Claire and Dani and those they associate with and those who inflict harm.
Yeah. And then I love it when they finally get over that fear, that moment where you just can see that they have no more fear in their eyes and they're ready to completely take a sledgehammer into the whole thing. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
So how was this for you? Because you said you're writing basically 8 novels because of the two perspectives and the, you know, the cohesion that comes with that. I feel your pain on that alone.
Yeah.
But also in writing something like this, it's not to say that there aren't moments of levity, and it's not to say that these characters are not loved, but it's hard material to write because you're also writing towards something that we know is coming, sadly.
Yes. Yeah, it was hard. It was hard, but there are those moments. I mean, it's a love story as much as it is the rape story. Claire had a very complicated relationship with this guy, and in the beginning pages, it was started off really beautiful. And I really enjoyed writing those pages. And also in terms of the love story between the girls, I thought that was a beautiful love story to write. And, you know, the best love stories are very complicated. So I love that the two girls, Claire and Dani, found each other in the end. And that's really what the book is all about. It was hard. It took, I often joke to my friends, I was like, I will die writing this novel. It's going to say on my tombstone, died writing Parachutes, you know, or died trying to write dual POV. Because it was so hard. But I don't know. I just sort of, it was so important for me to tell this story that I just kept going.
So can we talk about the dudes for a bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
The majority of characters are heterosexual.
Right.
I may be projecting in terms of like...
Well, there is a...
There is a queer character.
There's a romance between two girls.
Yeah, yeah. But most of the ones we're seeing are pretty much heterosexual.
Right.
And the diversity of the dudes in this, it made me really start thinking about things because I'm technically a single woman, not married anymore. So I'm technically single. It made me think about the way the body. So you established that very early on because that felt so real among so many other things in Parachutes was the articulation of desire, especially from young men and older men. Let's not discount those. And the ways in which the body doesn't feel like your own and how it's hard to articulate that, especially for these two primary characters. It's interesting with Teddy, who is Claire's beau. When it comes to Teddy, you know, they're doing the Skype thing because she had to move. And he does the sweetest thing with the flowers. It was very, you know, something out of an 80s movie. Uh-huh. And then it's like, well, all he wants to do is this. He just becomes obsessed with her body. And right. Even Zach, the first thing he comments on about Claire is her body. He's like, you're hot. You look good in the pool. And, you know, just how many times all these guys are looking at the body and how it's kind of hard to parse that out. Like, is this a compliment? And da, 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 da. And I know when I was a teenager, I wanted people to respond to my body because I wanted to feel desirable. That's right. Like, that's the gateway, right? Is like, well,
I mean, just look at all the videos on TikTok, right? I mean, there's so many of them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. But now as an adult woman, it's when I was going on dates before I met my boyfriend, it was, did you say something about my body? You know what I mean? Like, is that the first thing you're responding to? How dare you? Like, I have a brain.
Absolutely. I think it comes with our confidence in ourselves and the knowledge that we have more to offer and the confidence to be able to stand up for all that other stuff and almost tell people, don't look at me. I'm a piece of meat. Don't look at me that way. But I think that for young girls, they're very vulnerable because we have at the same time society telling them, hey, if you look this way, if you can get, I don't know, Kim K's, I don't know, whatever, then you're considered really cool or really hot or whatever. And so it's hard for young women. It's very hard. It still is very, very hard.
It really is. And for me, I'm almost 40. So I'm responding like, how dare he say that? How dare you?
Someone, you know, cat calls and walking on the street, just trying to walk your dog, just trying to be a normal human. And then people make some ridiculous remark about you. And you're just like, oh, why did you have to do that? Why did you have to do that and say that to me? And it's hard because sometimes people don't even mean it. They're not trying to ruin your day. You know, they were taught to say that. It is hard.
And then when I'm wearing that my nice blouse, no one says anything. And that kind of turned, like, at least for me, when I wore nice blouses, I don't anymore in quarantine. But when it's like, hey, I'm cute today, no one's noticing. What's going on? I invested a lot at Ann Taylor. So basically, this book has multitudes, y'all. Multitudes. But I'm curious, this might be kind of a curveball question, but when it comes to the guys that you've presented, was there any you were kind of like, he's not horrible, because I kind of fell for Teddy. I was like, I wish you'd give Teddy another chance. He's not there. He can't defend himself. Not that there's any defending. I just wish you'd, you know.
Yeah.
I fell for Teddy.
You know, the guys in Parachutes are very complex. I've had a lot of people tell me how much they love Jay and how much they're angry that Jay, you know, and doing what he did.
Really?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people say how much they love Jay. And it's just like, oh, I get it. In one sense, I get it. Because Jay, especially the early pages, does respect Claire initially to a certain extent. She doesn't want to have sex and he kind of accepts that. And in writing these, even the male characters, I wanted to show how this thing can happen. You know, I wanted to show how rape happens. And a lot of people think, oh, that's never going to happen to me because I would never date anyone like that. And, oh, that's never going to happen to my daughter because I raised her better than that. I hear those kind of comments all the time. And what's interesting to me is in showing the complexity of losing control, I want people to really realize, actually, this can happen to any of us. And that's why we have to take rape culture seriously, because it can happen to any of us. It's not just a, oh, I've got a really great way of picking out guys and that's never going to happen to me. You just can't say that. And so that's why I wanted to write really complex guy characters as well, where you can see how they lose control. But you can also see, I mean, there are parts of Jay that I think I feel for, you know, his whole relationship with his dad. Like, I feel for that. I feel all the stuff that he does initially. But I also think he's a jerk, right? I mean, he stands her up. He does this. He does that. He leaves her and goes off to I don't know where for a few days. But I wanted to show all the complexities of males in the 21st century.
And so that brings me to a question about Zach.
Yeah, I love that.
I have my thoughts about Zach because I was just like, what? I was like, this whole time. I was just like, okay, Zach. I think it's because I also see myself in Danny in that way too, of, you know, the person who does what she's supposed to do, right? Danny. Yeah. Is a high achiever. She's smart. She's so smart. You know, and it seems like her physicality or what people's ideas of beauty are get sidetracked because she's such a brain. And when it came to Zach, I had a lot of, and I may be projecting, but you know, I had some animosity towards him. Like,
he takes her kindness, and I mean, mm-hmm. he doesn't really always. Maybe he doesn't want to see that she likes him. I don't know. I've definitely been Danny too. I mean, the number of times I've tutored someone who like had absolutely no idea how I felt, you know, just growing up as a kid or something. Or like if you like a boy and then they don't really know how you feel. I remember this happened in like fifth grade. And I still think about it sometimes. But anyway, but it's hard. And it's hard for Danny. And it's not because of her physicality. I just think she is very, very smart. She's very clear on what she wants. And that intimidates guys sometimes. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Probably just really like Claire, probably because of the swimming thing. But yeah, I mean, Danny is someone who knows exactly what she wants. She's very ambitious. She's very driven. She doesn't even really need a guy. She just is so strong. But at the same time, you know, we as the reader understand how vulnerable she is.
And I saw that a lot too, was that kind of, I saw it from Danny's perspective and I saw it from Claire's perspective too, of he seems like the type of guy that would be supportive. I never actually felt like he was supportive enough of Danny. I didn't want them to get together. I will just say, I didn't necessarily want them to get together. I was just like, you should want her. Or really, he should be better. I said, I want Zach to be better, because I was like, you take advantage of her a lot. It's like, can we study? Can we study? Can we study? He listened to her. You know, he's like, I'm listening. Oh, you should just do this. Oh, you want me to boo her? I'll boo her. But, you know, it was just kind of like, this isn't super helpful. It's kind of cute, I guess. Yeah. It's not super helpful, Zach. You're not super helpful right now.
Yeah. I think
is also a great, great job of showing, like, actually, they're not really compatible.
She has her heart broken, but at the same time, you know, she thinks about it. I think that she can do better than Zach, and she already has all the resilience, and she already has all of the stuff that she needs. I think she just really liked the idea that there was a guy who also was in a similar scholarship situation as her, that she could help, and that who would get it. And that's a very isolating feeling when you're going to an elite private school. You don't have a lot of people like you who are poor. It's very lonely. And you feel like no one could possibly understand what you're going through, which is that you've got shit that you have to deal with the administration, but at the same time, you're taking money from the administration. And sometimes that makes you feel like you can't say everything.
It's complex.
Yeah.
So writing this with the aim of it going towards young adults, I'm thinking a lot about what you said earlier too, about when you said you've heard people say, oh, well, I raised my daughter to not pick dudes like that, or to act better, or I would never pick dudes. Right. And I just think so much about also what is presented here, because Danny is also a force and vulnerable. And that's the complexity of being someone who is assured is people don't think you need anything.
Right, right.
And we needed the men to be accountable, the young men, the older men to be accountable. So it's interesting how that keeps coming up with this discussion, right? Especially if we're looking at heterosexual relationships and we're looking at like the women as victims is how often the women are the ones having to be like, well, what did you do? Da 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 da. Those moments felt very real of like, well, you were dating him, weren't you?
Right.
As if it would be better if he was just a stranger out the street or something like that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. We're so harsh on ourselves and we're so harsh on each other. And that's one of the things I wanted to point out. Look at the villain in the story. It's that headmistress who's trying so hard to tell these girls, let's just keep this on the DL. Let's just move on. You guys, you can get past this. Come on.
While parading them around.
Yeah. That's terrible. That's inexcusable. And I think we all have to do a better job of identifying all those systems that perpetuate rape culture. You know, a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of administrators who go, well, how can we possibly do anything about it? It's between two individuals. It's like, well, actually, how we respond when they come to us, it's not just between two individuals. It's all of us and our attitudes and what we say and how much we're going to put up with this, quote unquote, what we can do to actually help the victim and make sure, and the training that we do, like all of this stuff, we can actually do a lot. It's not just between two individuals.
Exactly. I think especially you have two women on the cover and both of the characters are Asian Pacific Islanders. And I think the assumption is this book is for young women, as publishing does, because I work in it. You know, this is for young women. Can we talk about how young men need this book?
Absolutely. I wrote this book. I have two boys and a girl. I wrote this book as much for my boys as I did for my daughter. I think my boys need to read it even more than my daughter. You know, I want them to make sure they understand consent and understand from the female perspective what it feels like to be violated.
And the differences in it, right? Because yeah. you show variables of what assault is, because it is not one thing.
It's not one thing. And it can even happen when you are dating someone. It's not necessarily just some scary stranger off the street pushes you into a dark alley. That doesn't always happen. It doesn't happen that way for, I would say, the vast majority of us, right? For a lot of people, it's like an acquaintance or a teacher or somebody that you know, a boyfriend, a boss. Like, it could be anyone.
It's just wild to me. Like, and I really hope a lot of young boys read it in conversation with young women. I hope that those who do not prescribe to a gender also read it, because they need to be part of that conversation as well. I just hope it makes the rounds of something that is a book that is universally understood and recognized, of just the levels to this, the levels to which gaslighting happens, people stay silent, to which people can take that trauma and project it on other people.
Right. I mean, even like the first thing, and talking about gaslighting, the first thing that Claire's parents say to her when she tells them is, oh, don't worry, we're not mad. It's like, what kind of a comment is that? We're not mad at you? Like, we're not, which they're saying, trying to be supportive, but you know, all the things that we end up saying to survivors, it's really interesting, and we have to check ourselves more, I think, as a society.
Yeah, definitely. And I need to be conscious of that as well, because, you know, I recognize that people who raise me are kind of conservative in ways, even though they vote quote unquote liberal. So I really appreciate books like this where it looks at those nuances of how we talk.
Yeah, especially to young adults, teenagers, because we want them to feel safe bringing this to us. Like, imagine this happened. We want them to feel like they can come and we're not going to judge them. I've tweeted about what happened to me at Harvard Law School, and I've now gotten so many DMs and tweets and replies from so many young people about similar things that they've gone through. And it's heartbreaking. You know, a lot of times some people went through the administration and were not believed. Some people were sued by the perpetrator. Some people were, I mean, it just, the list goes on and on, and it breaks my heart. But at the same time, we as a society need to do a better job putting those pieces back together for these individuals. And that's one of the things that really was so liberating sharing Parachutes, was sharing my personal story. This was something that happened to me that I had kept to myself for a really long time because of the way that the administration handled it was so traumatic for me. And in telling the world finally what happened, it was the most liberating feeling in the world to be able to put it out there and then give a lot of other people the courage to come forward with their own stories is really just the best form of, I think, the best form of art and protesting at the same time. So it was really great.
Thank you so much for sharing that and this book, because I know it is a tremendous feat to write a book, period. And as we've said, multiple perspectives. to write a book like this, it's really not easy. And I thank you so much for being open to talk about it and for creating it and putting it out in the world and being open to help create more conscious discussion.
Thank you. You're so welcome. I'm really proud of it. So I'm glad it can hopefully heal a lot of people and enlighten a lot of people.
We really need the enlightenment, Kelly. Quite frankly. It's been disturbing few years. So we need a lot of enlightenment.
Oh my God, it's been so hard. Yes, absolutely.
So how may people reach out to you? I know people have been reaching out to you, and you've been so kind also during quarantine to have done workshops and stuff like that with people. How can people follow you, hear more about what you're doing, support you, all that good stuff?
They could follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Kelly Yang HK, and then online at kellyyang.com. And that's pretty much it. They can email me if they want, which is on my website. But I'm really happy, to always hear from readers. I love being able to see how the stories are resonating with people. I mean, as an artist, that's really all you want. And that's the most you can wish for.
And it's Kelly Yang, K-E-L-L-Y. Yang, Y-A-N-G.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Kelly. I really appreciate it. This has been so lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Jen. This was so much fun.
Yay.
And I hope I'll get a chance to see you in person after COVID and give you a hug.
Samesies, I want to see people again so badly that aren't on a screen.
I'm trying to imagine the post-COVID world. Are we going to be scared of hugging each other, or are we going to be like hugging everyone? I'm like trying to imagine, And I don't know, but it sounds like such a brave new world.
I feel like that's going to be the thing I'm asking people. Are you okay with a hug, a handshake, or do you want me to stay 6 feet away from you? Right. That's going to be what I say to everyone.
We're going to have to add all these options. 6 feet away, elbow bump. Air high five.
We should wear little signs at conferences, like, you can fist bump me. That's as far as I feel comfortable.
Yeah. It's going to change. I think it's going to change the way we do everything. I think that I'm hopeful that some of the virtual stuff is here to stay, because, commuting is really overrated. So I hope some of that stuff stays.
Yeah,
just a little bit, but not to the point where we're just completely holed up in our houses forever.
Yes. Give the parents a break from their children, please. Think of the parents.
We're going through a hard time.
Don't you sympathize?
I know. No, but the first place I'm going to go is to the library. I wrote all of Parachutes in the library.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Librarians were watching me pull my hair out, trying to navigate all those things.
I want to go to a museum so bad. It's ridiculous.
It's going to be amazing.
We will get there. We will get there. I don't know when, but we will get there, Kelly.
We will get there.
Thank you again, Kelly, for being here.
Thank you. And take good care, and I will see you in real life after COVID.
Let's hope. And thank you all for listening. Once again, this is the Minorities in Publishing podcast. You can find it on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com, and on Twitter at minoritiesinpub, and wherever you listen to podcasts.